We will move on to the third case for this morning, which is Alfred Janaga v. Questar Capital. Ms. Getzey.
May it please the Court, Margaret Getz on behalf of Appellant Questar Capital Corporation. This case involves a dispute between a brokerage firm, Questar Capital, and its customer, Mr. Janaga. Mr. Janaga,
can I ask you a preliminary question? Things were left in an odd posture in the district court, and I want to outline a couple of different possibilities. Sometimes a district court really just hasn't finished processing an important preliminary question. We don't ask district judges to decide things based on an hour's consideration or something. And this district court judge wanted a little bit more time to decide if there was really a contract at all between Mr. Janaga and the various brokerage entities, Hessick Financial, et cetera. Sometimes what the district court judge is effectively denies a stay of the proceedings in favor of arbitration. And that takes us over into the prima paint kind of issue. Is there some sort of generic challenge to the contract, in which case there should be a stay and it goes to the arbitrator, or is there some focused challenge on the arbitration clause itself, in which case if there is no agreement to arbitrate, once again, there shouldn't be a stay. If there is an agreement to arbitrate, then off you go and you arbitrate. And I'm trying to decide in this case whether we have a situation where the district judge just wanted maybe another 4 weeks or so to decide whether there was any contract at all between Mr. Janaga and Hessick Financial. And if so, is this appeal premature? Is there jurisdiction over this matter?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe definitely under the Federal Arbitration Act, Section 16, this court has jurisdiction because we move pursuant to Sections 3 and 4 of the Federal Arbitration Act.
But wouldn't you agree that suppose this piece of paper that you have in the appendix didn't even exist? You would agree, would you not, or tell me if you don't agree, that there can't be arbitration if there's no contract between the parties?
Yes, we agree. Under the Federal Arbitration Act, you have to have a written agreement.
And then the next question is, who has to decide if a certain piece of paper amounts to a contract or not? I would have thought that's a preliminary question for the court.
And the court determined,
put up a piece of the phone book, you know, back in the old days, it showed my age, you know, that once upon a time there were phone books, or something, some random flyer that came in the mail. That's not a contract between the parties. So the district court has to look at the written materials you've submitted and decide whether they amount to a contract, right?
And under the facts of this case, with the application of black letter law, there was a contract between Mr. Janaga and Questar.
So I think you have to be arguing that Judge Shader, that the error that he makes is in thinking that there is some question whether it's a contract, because he says, and I think in a sense correctly so, that there's a preliminary issue, and that is whether there's a contract. Right? That's what he's postponed things for.
Yes, we agree that the main issue is whether there is a contract between Mr. Janaga and Questar.
Well, and I'm looking, say, for example, this is your this is the opening brief of actually Hessick Financial and Mr. Hessick. Judge Shader says this isn't a question, as I said at the beginning of a recent page 5 of the appendix, for the asserted lack of consent, whether it would be characterized, it's rather the question of the existence or non-existence of consent. and he thinks he needs to decide that. The first question is to determine, this is line 15, first is to determine whether there was an agreement. And so he denies without prejudice and says, let's just see if there's an agreement. Now, why is that wrong? Why are you saying he didn't need to decide whether there was an agreement?
His order implies that there is no agreement. But
he says he's going to decide. He's just dismissed without prejudice. He hasn't decided there isn't an agreement.
But, Your Honor, even a motion or even an order denying without prejudice is still immediately appealable because our motion to stay and or compel arbitration was denied.
Well, but I don't know that I'm making myself clear, because suppose the judge just said, no one has submitted to me the written material that you say is an agreement. You don't say the judge saying, I'm going to deny your motion to stay right now without prejudice because I want you to get the papers in front of me. I mean, that's a case processing order. Every time the judge says, no, I'm not going to issue a stay, doesn't give rise to an appeal. We've said that in cases. There are case processing orders where the judge just wants to get all the information in front of him before he makes that decision.
But here you're
trying to figure out, do we have a case processing order here, or do we, in fact, have something that was de facto a decision to deny a stay based on some interpretation of the agreement, or perhaps based on an illegal error about what prima paint means, or based on something cognizable?
Your Honor, the district court ruled that there was no contract. He found that there was not a meeting of the minds. So his denial...
Where does he say that? Because what I see him saying is the step that has to come first is to determine whether there was an agreement. And so he says, and accordingly, I am at this point denying the motion to stay and to compel arbitration, but by definition, that's without prejudice for the possible renewal if it's determined on an appropriate record that there is indeed an agreement to arbitrate at all. So that's what I'm trying to get behind. What does he mean by that little passage?
Your Honor, the contract in this case, it's not as the situation you suggested where the parties never submitted an agreement to the court. He had the agreement, and he determined, based on Mr. Janiga's affidavit, that there was no meeting of the minds, there's no contract, and so he denied the motion, and we are now appealing because, as the court noted in Prima Paint, delaying a party's decision to arbitrate conflicts with the clear congressional purpose in the Federal Arbitration Act. Here we have a written agreement to arbitrate that contains an arbitration provision.
And that agreement consists of these various forms that were signed by the plaintiff at the time he opened this account. And those were in the record before the district court.
Exactly. They were
and
in the record.
It contains... The opening form, the new account form, contains a very clear arbitration clause.
Exactly.
Right, so. And so I'm just saying, I agree with that. This is all here as well in the appendix. I think your, not to put words in your mouth, but I think your argument really is, number one, the question whether there is an agreement between the parties is a question of law. It's something that the court decides de novo. And I think, number two, you really must be arguing that this district judge was applying the wrong standard to whether there was an agreement because he's worried about how thoroughly Mr. Janiga understood this document that he signed. But he did, there is a written document, even if the only page he had in front of him was this page, Joint Appendix 37, with his signature. It has in these big capital letters, I've understood the pre-dispute arbitration agreement contained on page 4. So he signed something. And I would imagine your argument has to be if the district judge perhaps did misunderstand Prima Paint, because this is enough to kick it over to the arbitrator to resolve everything else.
Yes, Your Honor, it is a two-step. Before we get to prime of paint, we have to determine that there is a contract.
Right.
I think we all agree on that.
And you're saying the district judge made a legal mistake in thinking that he didn't have enough in front of him to resolve that question.
The judge erred in finding that there was no contract between the parties.
He never says that, though. I mean, I wish you would get off that, because I mean, what he says is I'm going to have more proceedings, and I think your position is he didn't need more proceedings. He had the documents that Judge Sykes is referring to.
Exactly. Our position is that he had enough in front of him to determine that this is a valid binding contract with the application of black-letter law to the facts here. Mr. Janiga concedes that the objective manifestation of intent is what applies. We have no dispute on what the court needs to look at. Here, Mr. Janiga's signature on that client agreement is the objective manifestation of his intent to enter into a contractual relationship with Questar. And
you have all this other evidence of giving $100,000 and then giving another $180,000. I mean, presumably people don't just do that for no reason.
What Judge Shader wanted to get into was the evidence about his proficiency in English and whether there was a fiduciary relationship and whether he adequately understood what he was signing and all of those sorts of issues, which are properly decided in arbitration once there's a contract that contains an arbitration clause, which there is. That is undisputed.
Yes, Your Honor, the district court erred because it ruled that Mr. Janiga had to know the contents of what he was agreeing to before he signed. That's in the joint appendix at 105.
Right.
Mr. Janiga claims he didn't read it, he didn't know what was in there. But that's not what the law says. This court in Paper Express said a fundamental principle of contract law is that a person who signs a contract is presumed to know the terms and is bound by them. A party doesn't need to read a contract for it to be effective. And all of that black-letter law makes common sense in this case and for all other businesses. If Questar couldn't rely on Mr. Janiga's genuine signature on the client agreement, how is it supposed to operate its business?
If you'd like to save a little time for rebuttal, you're welcome to do that, or you can use it now.
I will.
Mr. Ciesla.
May it please the court. I am Michael Ciesla on behalf of the appellee, Alfred Janiga. And the first point that the court brought up, I addressed in our brief as well, that I thought that the court left the door open to revisit this issue later after taking depositions, exploring more evidence. So I'm in complete agreement.
Well, what I was saying, though, I don't know that you're in complete agreement with me, because my problem, I think that's what Judge Shader thought he was doing. I think he genuinely thought that he needed this additional evidence to decide whether there was a contract. But my issue is that, number one, that's an issue that's subject to our de novo review.
Yes.
And number two, I think he's asking the wrong set of questions. And if he is asking the wrong set of questions, and we already have enough in front of us to decide that there is a contract, if we decide there is a contract, then you're into arbitration.
Absolutely. I'm not in disagreement with that.
It doesn't have to do with whether he understands English, and it doesn't have to do with whether there was equal bargaining power. There very often isn't in particularly consumer arbitration contracts.
I absolutely agree. Everything that you're saying about that is correct. But what we're looking to, and this is what Prima Paint gets to, and this court in Sweet Dream said that it will not compel arbitration unless parties have agreed to do so, you have to go to simple contract formation.
But no. I mean, I think that you have at a minimum this page where his signature appears below the statement that he agrees that there's going to be arbitration. You also have course of conduct evidence, and it seems to me this court can look at that evidence and come to a conclusion whether there's a contract, even if there's perhaps fraud in the inducement, that's prima paint, even if there is some other flaw of lack of meeting of the minds, et cetera, that's for the arbitrator. Now, a lot of people think prima facie is kind of a strange decision, but there it is. I mean, it's what the Supreme Court has told us to do, and these kinds of issues are entrusted to the arbitrators.
But prima facie says that the district court is to look at the contract creation and see whether or not there was an agreement to arbitrate. And
that's determined by the document.
Well,
and
what I would propose...
And reinforced here, corroborated here by the course of conduct, but, you know, we don't have to go beyond the document.
Well,
the district court should not
I
have.
Think you do, Your Honor, because what we have is... And this is undisputed throughout the course of the proceedings at the district court and at this court's level, which is my client, Mr. Janiga, received a piece of paper, signed it, got no other documentation to come with it, which includes this arbitration agreement.
The piece of paper he got refers to an arbitration agreement, and your problem is you don't have any evidence that focuses only on the arbitration agreement. You don't have evidence that somebody put whiteout over that sentence when he signed it so that he didn't know. So he signs everything else, understands he's entering into a brokerage arrangement or whatever it is with Hessick Financial. Your evidence all goes to the contract as a whole, which is what prima facie says does not bail you out of arbitration.
Well, I believe it does. I believe it goes to contract creation, and if I may address
that
point.
But not particularly with respect to the arbitration clause.
Well, the arbitration clause, if we're going to assume for a fact that my client had the one piece of paper that says there's a pre-dispute arbitration, what does that mean? There's no terms to what this arbitration agreement means. To say that we're just going to arbitrate, does that mean it goes to FINRA? Does that mean it goes to
a
private arbitrator?
Doesn't make any difference. Lots of arbitration agreements are completely ad hoc. The parties just agree to arbitrate and then...
Well, you have to have terms to that.
Time. No, you don't. You can have an agreement to arbitrate, period. You can say that's the forum we're going to, and you don't have to go to the American Arbitration Association or FINRA or, you know, anybody else. You just... you know, appoint an arbitrator and go.
Well, then I guess you could take that even further and say that any agreement that's stapled to a signature page that says anything that follows becomes a contract as well.
What gets me, though, is that he has signed a piece of paper that says there's a pre-dispute arbitration agreement.
I cannot deny what he signed. That's correct.
That
well, and right above his signature is an acknowledgement by him that he's agreed it. Read it, agreed to it, and received a copy of it.
And
you're kind of stuck with that. It's, you know,
I don't believe I am.
Arbitration, you can raise all of these arguments. I think you seem to be equating the idea that if it's before an arbitrator, your client automatically loses. But I don't think that's necessary. That's not true at all.
Well, I don't think it affords, as I've pointed out in my brief, I don't think going to FINRA affords the same opportunities, especially from a discovery standpoint, that my client would be afforded in the district court.
That's irrelevant.
Well, I think it is relevant because we're in essence, when you're taking away a constitutional right, which is a trial by jury, I think it has to be clear that the parties have agreed to do so. And
what additional facts, if you had had that extra month or so in the district court, what additional facts would you have expected to bring forward to support your argument that there was no contract between Mr. Janiga and the defendants?
Well, I don't know everything that my client would have said if he was being deposed, because I don't know what their questions would be, but I would assume that my client's testimony and answers to any interrogatories would be consistent with everything that has been submitted to this date.
In other words, I assume that the facts would only be about these things that Judge Sykes has pointed out our cases don't make relevant, like, you know, my English is limited, I really mostly read in Polish, they weren't explaining, you know, I never saw the other pages. I mean, it seems like we already have the full factual record in front of us.
Well, that's why I thought we were here. And, you know, whether or not the appeal was timely or not, that's why I didn't object to it at that point. So I don't disagree with that. I mean, will the facts change? I can't foresee the future, but I don't see that anybody would go against affidavits that have already been submitted. if that's what you're asking.
That would be a problem anyway, wouldn't it?
I would ask that this court affirm the district court's ruling, and unless there's any other questions, my time is up.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Goetz?
Thank you. The district court, in his minute order, indicated that Mr. Janiga did not agree to arbitrate. And that's what you need to have, an agreement, before you even get to prima facie, as the court noted. And that's at Supplemental Appendix 4. In our docketing statement, we discussed the jurisdiction that this court has to immediately hear our appeal under Section 16 of the Federal Arbitration Act. And I'll just direct the court to those cases that we cited, Oblix, Kovaleski, and Boomer. In all of those cases, the district court there similarly said, well, let's wait and do some discovery, or denied the order without prejudice, similarly to what we have here. But we still firmly believe there is jurisdiction for this court to hear it, and as the court noted, the review is de novo. Mr. Janiga does not dispute that the review is de novo, so there is enough evidence before this court to decide that there is a contract between Mr. Janiga and Questar, a valid written contract, and pursuant to the terms in that contract, he has an obligation to arbitrate with Questar. And would there be harm to Questar if we had to go back down and do discovery? Absolutely yes. In prima facie, this court said that the Federal Arbitration Act intended for the procedures outlined in a party's arbitration agreement to be speedy and not subject to delay and obstruction in the courts.
So I have one final question for you, which has to do with the appeal, not your clients, but Hesek Financial Services and Wieslau Hesek. They're saying that by agency principles, they too should be able to take advantage of this agreement. Is that something that the district court should resolve in the first instance? I mean, your client is Questar.
Your Honor, as we indicated in our brief, we're not taking any position with respect to Mr. Hesek's appeal, and he is here if he wants to comment on how his appeal should be handled.
Okay, maybe you could just that one question. It's it's a little bit peripheral to the principal argument.
Surprise, I wasn't expecting to come up here, but
welcome to the court.
Documents are before the court on whether we should be part of the arbitration or not. And as I indicated in my brief, there's admissions that my clients were agents of Questar. That's reflected in the documents. The case law I cite says agents, even if they're non-signatories, are entitled to go to arbitration as well. And I believe just on the record of the documents before you, if Questar is entitled to arbitration, Mr. Hesek and Hesek Financial, are also entitled to go to arbitration along with them. That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.